All right, we'll just go ahead and go through the introduction. Good morning. Again, I'm Maureen Watson-Bolger with McKelvey Merchant & Associates, and we're proud to represent the Michigan corn growers. I want to thank all of you for attending, and especially our candidates. We know your schedules are busy, and we appreciate you joining us this morning. Our event is hosted by 17 agriculture organizations, and we represent a broad cross-section of Michigan's agriculture industry this morning. I want to thank both of you for being here. A few housekeeping items, just as reminders. This is an educational forum and an opportunity to hear the positions of our candidates. Please be respectful and refrain from displaying signs or interrupting our candidates. We'll begin. Each candidate will have 7 to 10 minutes to introduce themselves and lay out their broad platform on agriculture. We'll then take questions from the sponsoring organizations and our audience. If you continue to text those in, or you can write them on the back of your card. Joining us this morning, we have from the Democratic Party, Dr. Abdul El-Sayed and Dr. Sri Tanadar. Good morning. Dr. El-Sayed, if you would please begin with your platform.
Yeah, thank you so much. First of all, I'm honored and privileged to be here with you today. Very thankful for the opportunity to share a little bit about a vision that I hope that we all share for a state that is more just, more equitable, and more sustainable than the one that we live in today. I want to just introduce you to who I am by virtue of the people that I got to grow up with. And first and foremost, I just want to introduce my my grandpa and my uncle Eric, who came today, who've been in farming their whole lives. So Grandpa Jan and Uncle Eric. So most of you probably looking back there would be like, wait, they're your grandpa and uncle? Let me introduce you a little bit to my family. My father immigrated to this country from Alexandria, Egypt, back in the 1970s. He took a bet on an America big enough for anyone. His father sold vegetables in a local market. His mother, wisest, most intelligent human being I have ever met to this day, never got to go to school. She was illiterate. They raised 6 kids in a one-bedroom apartment. My dad's path was paved because he got the opportunity to come to the United States of America, to Detroit, Michigan, to go to Wayne State University and become an automotive engineer. He met and married a woman whose family could not have differed more, and that is my stepmom, Jackie. She was born and raised in Gratiot County, Michigan, to my grandpa Jan and my uncle Eric. Born and raised in Gratiot County, Michigan, her family has been in this part of the world since before the Revolutionary War. They've been teachers, small business owners, and farmers. And she grew up in a farming community, also became an engineer, met and married my father. And the house I grew up in was the house built by Muhammad and Jackie, right? Hilarity ensues. Give you a sense of my home, right? I just want you to think about walking in to this house on Thanksgiving, right? First thing that you see and smell is that Thanksgiving turkey. My grandma takes care of it because if my dad got his hands on it, it tastes like Egyptian food. And she uses a recipe she's used for decades. You then have these folks that you come to know, right? They're all watching TV, the Lions losing on TV. And you've got my folks. You've got my dad, Muhammad, who I already told you about. Alongside his work as an engineering professor, he also leads prayers at various mosques in Southeast Michigan. He's a part-time imam. Then you've got my grandma, Judy, who is my grandpa Jan's wife. She was raised in Flint, Michigan, became a nurse. And she's now retired, but she and he are both deacons at their Presbyterian church. And then you've got the wild card in my family, who's my Uncle Piotr. And Uncle Piotr immigrated under very similar circumstances to my dad from a very different place. He was born and raised in Krakow, Poland. He teaches Slavic languages, coaches soccer, and is an avowed atheist, right? So you can imagine my folks, my father the imam, my grandma the deacon, my uncle the atheist, and all of us are just trying to figure out why the Lions keep losing on Thanksgiving. But that's the family I grew up in, and it taught me something very clear, that I love people. I love understanding who they are, what allows them to walk their lives believing in a tomorrow that could be greater than their today. And I learned that because my summers would have me getting on a plane, going to Alexandria, right, hanging out with my grandparents, aunts and uncles and cousins, coming back to Montcalm County, Michigan, where my family has had cottages on a lake for the past 90 years, and hanging out with my grandparents, aunts and uncles and cousins. Two groups of people who couldn't imagine the lives that one another lead, but I got to traverse them both. And for me, I thought that I wanted to use science, which I knew I loved, to help people, and decided to become a doctor. Going through medical school, right, and having done a PhD in public health at Oxford University as a Rhodes Scholar, I came to appreciate that people's health usually has a lot less to do with what happens in a hospital and a lot more to do with access to a very basic set of resources. A good job that pays a living wage, that puts a good roof over someone's head, clean air in their lungs, clean water in their cups, allows them to walk in their communities without being victimized by either a neighbor or the state itself. Those are the things that pattern health and disease. And to me, I dedicated my career to public health with the goal of being able to serve and build those things. I was named health commissioner of the city of Detroit when I was 30 years old. I was the youngest health commissioner in a major U.S. city. I walked into a department that had been shut down when the city of Detroit went bankrupt and with the responsibility of rebuilding it. We rebuilt it around the well-being of kids to break down the barriers that kids had to being able to learn and earn in Detroit like we would want for any child anywhere. We did things like build a program to guarantee every child a free pair of glasses. We stood up against the biggest corporate polluters in Detroit, a petroleum refinery that wanted to raise its emissions in the most polluted zip code in the state. We had every school, daycare, and Head Start tested for lead in the water after the Flint water crisis because I had just finished inspecting city schools and saw things like a mouse dead in the corner in a first grade classroom. We realized we had to get to work. We tested all 360 buildings in 6 months and created a protocol that's now model practice nationwide. A lot of folks ask, why are you running for governor? You know, you're awfully young. You're also kind of brown and kind of Muslim, right? And I'll tell you why. Because in that role, I came to appreciate that the circumstances that we live in have been dictated and dominated by a system of corporate greed that has bought off our politicians and dictated policy to us. You ask yourself why it is that we poison 9,000 kids in a city like Flint. Why it is that we can't get it right to empower local farmers in their communities. Why it is that in this state we can't fix our infrastructure. And it's because we've been told that the money has to go to corporate subsidies rather than be invested in us. So we're running the most aggressive and progressive campaign in the state of Michigan. Been to over 100 different cities, knocked on 100,000 doors, built a team of 3,000 volunteers. And let me tell you why they're coming around this campaign. It's because we don't apologize for having a vision for Michigan that includes everybody. We don't apologize for not touching the corporate money that has bought off our politicians. We don't apologize for who we are. We stand up for all of us. And this is the campaign we're building. I want to speak specifically to the issues at play today, issues that are relevant to thousands of farmers, the second biggest industry in the entire state, an industry that has largely been ignored because we have assumed in the state that it is an industry of yesterday when I believe that it can be an industry of tomorrow. I've never been a farmer myself, but my mom grew up in farming. My family comes from a community of farmers. And I believe deeply in the responsibility of being able to cultivate the earth and to create the means of industry and thriving by doing that. Let me tell you about what that means to me. One of the things that I've realized is that farmers have aged, and that's because we have not been able to inspire young people in my generation to take up the work. I think we have to be able to solve that. That means being able to empower systems of education and community organizations that help to incubate small farms. It means that while we sell our goods for 17 cents off the overall dollar that's made off of them, that we have to keep more of the processing opportunities and small business opportunities local. It means that thinking about sustainable long-term farming, we can think about how it is that we empower small farms to persist and succeed in a system where they get beat up on one side by large monopolies who buy their goods and on the other by a system of regulation that doesn't seem to understand what it is that farmers do. It means that we can think about how we build out the future of farming, both increasing the kind of goods that we produce and also increasing the value of those goods by keeping that value here in Michigan. It means making sure that over time, as we move to a system of sustainable, renewable energies in Michigan, that that is done together rather than on top of certain communities. It means that we are empowering basic things like infrastructure. It means that we are investing in our roads and bridges that people use every day. It means that we're protecting our water infrastructure to make sure that the water is safe and clean in communities all across the state. It means that we are also doing things to protect a way of life. One of the biggest challenges that farm workers have is that it's seasonal work. And that means that it's hard to pay for benefits. We as a state should stand up and just make sure that anybody in our state has access to the good of healthcare that they deserve just for being here. That's something we can do as a doctor. I know it's possible, and I know that it would also help us on a number of other issues we face in this state, whether it's auto insurance, which is way too expensive, or the cost of prescription drugs, which are also way too expensive, and we don't have the means of negotiating for. So I look forward to sharing a vision of who we are and who we can be as a state. And I know that it's possible. Now, I'll tell you, I know that traditionally, right, as a Democrat speaking at an ag forum, when I told my wife that I was going to go talk to the farmer, she's like, good luck with that. I was like, she's like, you're like a millennial Muslim doctor from Southeast Michigan. And I'm like, yeah, no, I get it. But here's the thing. I have been all over the state. And one of the things I took a bet on when I jumped into this race is that Michiganders are really good people. And they're asking basic questions about who's interested in listening to their stories, who's interested in understanding the challenges that they face in their life, who is interested in actually solving problems, in reaching across and touching hands on a vision for Michigan that includes all of us. Who can get it done because they understand how government works? Who's not trying to buy an election, but rather asking all of us to be a part of something that's bigger? I know that Michiganders are thirsty for a vision for Michigan that includes us all, that allows us to see that whether you go to Kalkaska or Marquette or Flint or Detroit, people are asking the same basic questions about why government is failing them, and they're looking for solutions. And we've got those solutions, and I look forward to a conversation. I look forward to working with you and walking this path toward a Michigan that we can all believe in. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dr. Sri Tanadar?
Good morning. How are you all? I'm so delighted to be here. I am an immigrant. Immigrated to the United States in 1979. They told me it's going to be cold in America in the month of February. When it gets cold where I grew up, we wear a sweater. So I landed in JFK with a sweater and my sandals at minus 10 degrees. Got a PhD in chemistry at the University of Akron, Ohio, and then got a job in Michigan at the University of Michigan as a scientist. And the only question was my Impala, which I'd bought for $200, will it make from Akron, Ohio to Ann Arbor, Michigan? I mean, those were days life was simple. All of my worldly possessions belonged nicely in the trunk of the Impala, and I still had so much room left. Worked as a scientist at the university, and then I got a job outside to St. Louis, Missouri, where I started and bought a very small business. I'm not a business person like Donald Trump or Rick Snyder. I'm a small mama papa shop. That's what I started. 3-person company that I bought for $75,000. A chemical testing, chemical analysis company, analyzing water for things like lead and toxic chemicals, analyzing fruits for pesticide residues. So more of a chemical analysis, chemical testing person. And that business grew, started growing. And in 1996, the business had grown to about 11 employees, about $2 million in revenues. And that's when I lost my first wife. And she passed away, leaving behind 2 young children, 4 and 8 years old. And I took care of those children as a single father while running a business and creating jobs. A few years later, I got remarried again. The boys grew up, graduated from Ross Business School in Ann Arbor, and now they are entrepreneurs creating jobs in America. The business kept growing, and by 2008, the business had grown to about $65 million in revenue, 450 jobs, all created here in America. Not a single job outsourced. And then came the Great Recession. Who remembers the Great Recession of Michigan? You know, Michiganders suffered a lot. And my business, which served a lot of small companies, small startup companies, virtual companies. So my customers started going belly up in the recession. And the bank got impatient put a receiver on my business. And this is the business that was almost worth $200 million, a business that I'd bought for the $75,000. And Bank of America, which was too big to fail and gotten federal subsidiaries, came in and put a receiver. And as I was walking out of last time from my business, I saw an Entrepreneur of the Year trophy that I had won from Ernst & Young, which I was very proud of. And I took that in the box that the bank gave me, along with pictures of my children, and I said, someday I'm going to win another of this trophy again. I came home and learned that my home is going to be foreclosed in 3 weeks. And my wife and I put together all of our belongings into a budget rental truck. And we drove to Ann Arbor, Michigan all night. And in 2010, I found a small rental place that used to be a lab, and I restarted that business. In the last 6 years, I created 50 good paying jobs in Ann Arbor. And then realized that I have a higher calling, more than just doing good for my family. I felt I have achieved the American dream, but the American dream is fading all across America. And I felt a tremendous obligation to give back. And I sold my business in 2016, a month after I got that award again, Entrepreneur of the Year. Took some money out of the sales proceeds and gave it to all of my employees. And I distributed the money to my employees based on their length of service, not based on their title. So Katie, my administrative assistant, walked away with $107,000 bonus. I also put some money into my campaign so that I don't have to take a single penny from corporate special interests back. So when I go to Lansing, I will be beholden to no one. And I was the last candidate to announce for governor of Michigan for the Democratic primary, the fourth one, almost 6 months after the others have announced their candidacy. And I just recently, a couple polls came out that put Senator Whitmer at 34% and myself at 24%. So I'm within 10% of the front runner. I still have more than half of the money that I put in, so I have enough resources to take this and win this. And I'm here to show a clear contrast between myself, an outsider, a small business owner, as opposed to someone that has been a career politician. So that's a contrast that I'm very pleased to talk about. And I'm a progressive Democrat, but I understand I'm like a fiscally savvy Bernie Sanders. No disrespect to Bernie, but I understand running a business. I understand the challenges that we all face in terms of the government regulations that hamper our ability to run. I understand the necessity to get good workforce, good well-trained workforce. I understand what happens to an industry when many people retire and a lot of the talent is gone. And how do we attract young people to get back into this profession? So there is a lot that I understand. I come from an understanding having run small businesses for the last 26 years. So I come prepared to help other business owners. I'm the only gubernatorial candidate that has created jobs. I'm the only one. And I'm the only one that understands the needs of small businesses. So what I want to do is move the focus away from big corporate welfare that we have seen under the current administration, and I want to bring that focus back into small businesses. I want to create an atmosphere of entrepreneurship, and I want to make Michigan a startup capital. So this is what my goal is. I come ready I'm a strong leader. I grew up in poverty, and my mother is my hero. And as I was growing up in poverty, I learned from her how to stand up, no matter how hard things get. And I learned from my mom how to be common sense and how to use pragmatism to solve problems. And the most important thing I learned from her is how to be fearless. So I'll bring that fearless leadership to Lansing. I'll be beholden to no one. And I want to take this state to the next level in terms of education, infrastructure, and growth of businesses and creating good paying jobs. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Now we're going to move on to the question and answer portion of our program. We'll begin with the questions submitted by the sponsoring organizations, and then we'll follow with the questions from the audience. If you do have questions to submit, you can still put those on your cards and someone will come by and get that, or you can text them in as well. This is a forum, not a debate, and so our candidates will each have equal time and will respond to the question, not to each other's answers. So we'll begin. Dr. Tanandar, if you would begin with, how do you feel about the future of animal agriculture in the state, and do you feel it's a benefit to grow these industries in our state?
I think it's important to grow all of the industries. We need to create jobs. We need to create good paying jobs. And the animal industry is just as important as any in terms of creating businesses, improving our business environment. And so, yes, absolutely, we need to. And what I want to do is create special incentives, because farmers have a tough job to do. They are so dependent on the weather many times. And a lot of times farming is ignored. Even though farming is the second largest industry in Michigan, often it's an afterthought and not enough focus is paid to that. So I want to make sure that I have the best of the best experts at the table. I want to make sure that I have the farmers at the table when we make important critical decisions regarding farming industry, including animal farming.
Thank you. And Dr. Al-Sayed?
Yeah, we're talking about a $4.73 billion industry in Michigan. Of course, we want to see that grow. And it's actually the fastest growing part of agriculture here in Michigan. My own family works in animal agriculture. My uncle designed a product called a feeder meter, which is really focused on improving the efficiency of calf feeding. And so recognizing the importance of this and have a stake in it, I want to talk about what it would take for us to do this, right? One of the big challenges that we have in Michigan is that we produce a lot in terms of agricultural output, but oftentimes the processing of that output, that gets done elsewhere. And I had the privilege of visiting a cheese shop called Leelanau Cheese out in Leelanau. Anybody know about Leelanau Cheese? So they make some of the world's best cheese, and they make it in northern Michigan. And what they've been able to do is take dairy. I mean, the gentleman who owns it is a guy named John. His family's been in dairy farming for generations. And what they've been able to do is take that dairy farming. He married a woman from Paris, and she was a cheesemonger. And so together, they were able to take Michigan's dairy, which is some of the best in the world, and then be able to build out the processing so that they're now selling this cheese in the Traverse City area and making a tremendous amount of money on it. One of the responsibilities that we have is to take from that 17% of yield that gets paid in terms of the selling of the actual product, to be thinking about how it is that we build the processing on the back end to keep those businesses and keep that value here in Michigan. I think this is a real small business opportunity. As a progressive, I don't believe that we should be selling out to corporations. One of the big problems we have in the state is we give tens of billions of dollars to corporations thinking that they're going to buy us out of our economic woes. That's not actually what creates jobs. What creates jobs is small businesses that we've invested in the infrastructure and the education and training to be able to create. And John and his wife's business really captures the essence of that. And so to me, we've got to think about how we're creating microloans to help farmers build out the processing on the back end that really brings in the value and helps to sustain those farms. And then the second big challenge here is an environmental one, working with local dairy farmers about thinking about how we make that process more efficient so that it's sustainable over the long term, and cutting the red tape where it doesn't need to be and empowering where it does. I ran a health department, and we as a department, we had to be the arbiter of when restaurants opened in Detroit. And nobody wants to eat at a restaurant that the health department hasn't actually given the A-OK to, right? Because nobody really wants typhus. Let's put it out there. But here's the thing, right? One of the problems with our process was that it was so inefficient that it was putting a ton of red tape in front of restaurateurs. And so we worked with the local city agency for buildings and safety and created a one-stop shop that cut the red tape for restaurateurs while at the same time making sure that our work was more efficient and people were safe and healthy while they're eating at our restaurants. That's something that we can bring to the agricultural industry, and something that I hope with my experience in actual government and government services and operating a part and arm of government in the city of Detroit, that we can bring to how we think about agriculture and partnering with agricultural institutions to make sure we're cutting red tape where it doesn't need to be.
Thank you. And Dr. Tanandar?
Well, I bring a focus on improving education. I think I want to be known as the education governor. And by that I mean is that we need to create a skilled workforce in our state. We see a lot of times large corporations like Amazon recently told us that fix your education system. There are not enough skilled people in the state of Michigan for corporations to come here and do work. And it, the same thing goes for the agriculture industry. As a scientist, I want to promote innovation. I want to invest in universities where there is cutting-edge technology happens that would help the farming community with new technology. I want to invest in encourage young people to go into agribusiness, go into biotechnology, bring in the newer technology to benefit, to modernize, to make your productivity even higher, bring more efficiency, and make your businesses more profitable. And so I want to work on the infrastructure. Our infrastructure is terrible. Our roads are terrible. Just the other day, I was coming to a debate like this, and the debate was at King High School in Detroit, and I got a flat tire as I was driving. And then within minutes, I got another flat tire. And I had to get that car towed, take an Uber, and get to the debate just a couple minutes before it started. But Michiganders spend so much money on infrastructure and repairing their cars. And I want to make sure that we invest sufficient money to fix our roads, fix our bridges, because the infrastructure is very critical for the farming community. So I would be the one investing in education. I would be the one investing in infrastructure to take Michigan to the next level. What we have seen in the last 7 years is cutting cost and not investing, and that's not going to take us where we need to. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next question. 12 other states have initiated programs that have made the farm business transition a little more appealing to the next generation through a loan guarantee program or a tax incentive. Would you consider a state-specific program to inspire Michigan's young and beginning farmers, and how would you formulate such a program? Dr. El-Sayed, if you'd begin.
Yep. So I graduated college about 10 years ago, and you look at where young people in my generation have chosen to invest in terms of a career. And two of the most important investments they've chosen not to make say a lot about where we as a state are investing. They've chosen not to become teachers in the same ways that people before them have come. And so we've seen part and parcel of that is because we stopped at investing in teachers and investing in education. But secondly, they've chosen not to go into farming. The number of classmates at Michigan that I came to know and appreciate who came from farming communities who chose not to go back into agriculture says a lot about what we're doing around investments. And I think there are three solutions here. Number one, I think we've got to be a lot better about being able to empower folks to have the capital that they need to grow and build, right? Right now, if you want to start a farm or if you want to make additions to the family farm, the capital is so expensive and we don't have a system out there for being able to invest in you to do that. And as a state, I think there are opportunities for us to make those investments. Thinking about bringing together, for example, an incubator program that would take the MSU Extension School, Small Business Development Administration, MEDC, put them together and really incubate new family farm-based ideas to help build the extension businesses that we need to keep the profits and the values here in Michigan and to empower young people. And on the back end of that, any graduate of that incubator would then come out with the ability to apply for and get a loan to build the business that they need to invest in the farm. The second thing that I think is really important is also on the innovation front, right? Right now, there's a lot more tech around being able to automate out the work on family farms. And I think the business side of that and the investment of being able to grow those businesses and build those ideas, I think there's a lot more investment that we as a state need to make, and I think young people can really be on the front end of that. And then the third thing I'll say is that we've got to be able to build local communities that young people are interested in. I'll tell you something about my generation. We don't really have much fealty to a corporation, right? There's no such thing called being a company man or a company woman anymore. We don't really have much fealty even to a place, right? People will grow up in a certain community and be just as quick to leave their community. But what we do have fealty to is a lifestyle. And what young people are interested in is being able to access and engage other young people, to be able to live around access to cultural resources. And some of our rural communities don't necessarily have those things. If we're able to invest in infrastructure and invest in development in rural communities across Michigan to build the kind of small businesses that can sustain there, there's a real opportunity to keep young people in those communities. And I think it's going to be critical for us. I'll just give you a statistic that I think we have to keep in the back of our minds. We have seen a 50% uptick in urbanism, people moving into cities, over the past decade alone. So if we want to keep our young people out in rural communities and engaged in farming that necessarily comes with that, we've got to be able to invest in the local towns and resources that will attract young people in the first place. And we're not doing that. People in my generation are also interested in new enterprise. They're interested in building on what was done before them. And so I think making those investments in new tech, making those investments in taking the family farm that potentially used to farm dairy, but then also extending that into potentially a cheese factory or a yogurt factory, those are the kinds of things that young people are really excited about being a part of. And then lastly, being able to connect our rural communities to urban communities. Every Saturday when I grew up, I told you my dad grew up in a fish market, right? And he used to help his dad sell vegetables. And so we would go to the Eastern Market in Detroit. Who's been to the Eastern Market before? So great, awesome place where people bring their wares and sell them, whether it be vegetables, raw vegetables, or the produce that they processed. And we've got to make sure that we're building the kinds of channels that empower the young people who are going into farming to be able to directly sell craft and artisan goods that they're producing on their farms into communities like that, because it's a huge business opportunity. And I think that we haven't really quite thought about what that looks like and haven't built out either the infrastructure in terms of transportation or the relationships that we need to be able to extend there.
Thank you. And Dr. Tanandar?
Yeah. I keep waiting to hear the music. I think the Republicans got a benefit of that soothing music. I have two young sons, as I told you, and they both are entrepreneurs. And when they got out of college and they wanted to do things, they found opportunities. And they both went to Silicon Valley, where they got grants and they got incentives and investments, and they found the right incubators where they could set up their businesses. And my kids are no exception. I have a one-year grandson, and I would much rather have him here so I can go see him than be talking on Skype, which I do often. So what we've seen here is young people have left Michigan. Our, if you look at our population, is either declining or flat. And that speaks for opportunities that are available for people. It also speaks about quality of life. And the way I would like to evaluate my performance as a governor of this great state is 4 years later, I'm going to ask myself, I'm going to be the hardest judge of my performance, and I'm going to say, did we improve our education? Did we take our education from the bottom 35 to the top 10%? Are our roads and infrastructure better today than it was 4 years ago? Do we have more good paying jobs? And are the young people finding opportunities to achieve their American dream here in Michigan? Or are they still leaving? So that's what I would, you know, talk is cheap. I, as a small business person, like you all are small or large business people, there's more than talk. We need to make things happen every day. We need to take good decisions every day, right? We all do that. And that's the kind of a work ethic I would bring to the governor's office. So to answer the question, I would certainly make sure there are incentives for young people to get into farming. My education plan would make community college and four-year college affordable and free of cost for any families that has an annual income of $120,000 or less. And if the young people stay in Michigan and work in Michigan, I would make sure their college debt gets forgiven over time. And if they stay in Michigan, start a business and create jobs for others, then their college debt will get forgiven even faster. I will ensure that we have a good apprenticeship program, a good mentorship program. We get bring technical education into middle schools and high schools. So those who do not want to go to a four-year college can get the required skill sets so they can live a good life. So ultimately what's going to matter is we need to improve the quality of life for all Michiganders. And that's how I will measure my success as the governor.
Thank you. We'll move on to our third question. Michigan is home to 5 ethanol plants, which use about 134 million bushels of corn each year. Will you support policies that would grow Michigan's ethanol industry, including increased ethanol infrastructure and using E85 in the state's fleet of flex fuel vehicles? And Dr. Tanadar, if you would start with this question.
Yes, I'm a chemist, and as a chemist, I see there's a lot of good chemistry used in farming. And certainly we need to support the ethanol industry. I would like to see, I think there is a laws where states should be using flex fuel, but the state employees often find it more convenient not to use flex fuel. And I think it starts with the state setting an example in using flex fuel. I really support, it's a cleaner fuel, obviously. Maybe a little less efficient, but it's a cleaner fuel than the petroleum fuel. And I'm against the petroleum fuel, and I've made a pledge not to take any money from the fossil fuel industry. So I support new technology. We need to, I don't know if there's a need for a sixth processing plant for ethanol, and I would like to learn that. I'm here more today to listen and learn as much about farming, because I'm not a farmer, unless you consider the small vegetable garden I have in the back of my home. But so I'm here mainly to learn, and I want to make sure that as a governor, I have access to the top talent coming from the farming industry. my ag director and the entire ag commission is something that I would rely on. And also I would rely on farmers at the table when we are making critical decisions. Again, having not beholden to any corporations, my focus would be looking at the problems, listening to the experts, listening to both sides, and arriving at a common sense, pragmatic solution that serves all the stakeholders. And once we arrive at a solution with my leadership skills, I would make sure that it gets done. So that would be my approach.
Thank you.
So there's a very specific question asked about supporting corn and ethanol. And I want to answer that very specific question. Right now, I mean, I just give you a sense of where we stand. Both the production and the use of traditional petroleum poisons communities. And I know that because I was the health commissioner in Detroit, where our air quality is really, really bad. And one of the reasons that the air quality is really, really bad is because we have a petroleum refinery in southwest Detroit. And when that petroleum refinery asks to increase its emissions to create more petroleum, almost every time it's been able to lobby government to get it done. The DEQ has become, in effect, a rubber stamp for that organization. And when I was there, for the first time, government decided to stand up, and I was the health commissioner, and stood up and said enough is enough with burning this stuff into our kids' lungs. Our children still already have threefold the likelihood of being hospitalized for asthma in this city than the state average, and we know that there are clusters of lung cancer around this petroleum refinery. In the early 2000s, right, when we saw the production of E85 take off, it was really, really important in terms of balancing out the amount of fossil fuel that we ultimately burn. And I think the use of corn in that way is a great thing. And so, yes, I do support E85, and I think that's really, really critical. But what I will tell you is that, you know, from my conversations with folks in corn farming, the question about the price of the commodity of corn is really a big question. And what we've seen is that as we've burned more of this corn in petroleum form, it has changed the pricing substantially. And so we're sort of caught in this vicious spiral, right? The more we turn into gas, the higher the price goes, and it definitely makes the price of corn more volatile, especially as we see more and more regulation. So what I want us to do is the following. Number one, where we can buy ourselves out of traditional fossil fuels by burning corn as gas, I think that's a good thing. And the fact that the state has picked up on that, I think, is really, really important. And so I support that. But at the same time, I want us to be asking bigger picture questions about how we support corn growers in the state around what has become a volatile and changing corn market in a way that E85 has definitely changed things. And then the second thing that I always pay attention to as a doctor is what the price of corn means for the price of food commodities and what that means for obesity and other health-related issues. And so all of these things are connected, right? Where what we do with corn as the single biggest agricultural commodity in the country matters a lot for problems, everything related to burning fossil fuels in the air, to everything related to what we eat and what we do with what we grow out of the ground. And so I want us to be very, very careful around how we engage this question and how we make these investments, putting the corn farmers front and center around this question and also asking ourselves bigger picture questions about what we're doing to our environment and what we might be doing to our food environment and local communities as we start transitioning more and more of the corn that we grow into into the fuels that we burn. I also just want to say something about the volatility of markets. One of the challenges that we have right now is that we have seen more and more consolidation in the nature of farming, right? Smaller farms, they go out of business, and then what happens is bigger farms buy them up. And those bigger farms then, they change the way that the market operates because they have more capacity to move that market. It's important to me that we continue to make small farming viable in Michigan. And part of the reason it's so important to me to make small farming viable in Michigan is because it changes the way that our farmers get to keep some of the value in Michigan of our farming output. And that has everything to do with commodity pricing. Who suffers when pricing changes on a market? The small farmers first, right? Because more and more of the proportions are overhead. And so we've got to think about how we address the consolidation, empower local farmers, empower small farmers, and also make sure that we are thoughtful about the long-term consequences of what we're doing with our corn product.
Thank you. We'll move on to our next question. We'll start with, what do you think the amendment of the state's Right to Farm Act in 1999 addressing preemption of local government ordinances means? And what action would you take to enforce the right to farm law? And Dr. El-Sayed, if you'd begin.
So some folks who get really upset with me for running because for a lot of reasons were like, you know what? I wouldn't elect you to be dog catcher. And the funny thing about it is I actually kind of was the dog catcher in Detroit. One of the things they don't tell you about taking on the health department is that you also have to take on animal control. And in Detroit, we have 138 square miles, some of which has been hollowed out in a lot of ways. And so you have homes, but you have a lot of spare land. And when you have a lot of spare land, what do folks like to do with the spare land? They like to farm. So on one of my first weeks of work, right, and I'm here thinking about infant mortality, we've got a really serious stray dog problem, and somebody comes to my office, literally comes and knocks on my door and says, what are you going to do about the chickens? I say, excuse me? They're like, what are you going to do about the chickens? I was like, I think you might have the wrong office. She's like, nope, this is the one. I want to ask you what you think about local farms in Detroit. And so the right to farm was something we thought a lot about in Detroit, and every time that we had a decision to make, we erred on the side of empowering local farmers in the city. Why? Because it's a good use of the land, and it's something that a lot of folks are interested in doing in terms of urban agriculture. And so the responsibility I think we have is to, number one, stand up for right to farm. I think it's really important. But number two, be working with local communities around how we establish best practices. And I think one of the challenges is that our communities are changing substantially. And we're seeing it all around, whether you're talking about a place like Sheboygan or a place like Detroit. They're changing a lot. And so what the nature of that change is going to be, I think, is something that municipal policy has a lot to do with. At the same time, state policy needs to guarantee the right of somebody who owns land to be able to use that land for agricultural purposes. So my hope would be that we are empowering local communities to establish municipal laws and ordinances that are consistent with right to farm, but at the same time help us to think about what the growth of those cities will ultimately look like. And so it's an issue that I wouldn't have ever thought that as health commissioner in the city of Detroit I'd be thinking a lot about, but it is an issue I did think a lot about, and I do hope that we can empower local farming in urban communities and do it at the same time as we respect the ways those communities are going to develop in the future.
Thank you. Dr. Tanadar?
Ah, I thought the music started. I am fully 100% supportive of right to farm. 100%. We have the laws, the 1999 amendment. We need to stick with it and support it. Many times, people want to live in small towns and they move out of larger cities and want to have that quieter lifestyle of a small town. And they don't realize that when you do that, there are issues in small town. You have farmers. And then we start seeing, we are a very litigious society. And then you see lawsuits and you see people interfering with local businesses, and we need to protect the farmers' right to practice and perform and do their business the right way, the way they need to do, and they shouldn't be bothered with unnecessary lawsuits. So again, as a scientist, I would take a look at these issues more as a scientist. What a scientist does is looks at data, takes decisions, what's the right thing to do, as opposed to making emotional decisions or making decisions based on ideology. a lot of these issues, we owe it to Michiganders to take a look at both sides of the issue. We want to protect the environment. At the same time, we want to protect the rights of the small businesses and their ability to do and earn a living for themselves, their ability to create jobs for Michigan. And so as a scientist governor, I would have all sides at my table, including the farmers. And I would ensure that we have pragmatic, common sense policies and not hysteria based on ideology. That's what I would do. I will implement good common sense policies and stick with them.
Thank you, and we'll move on to our next question. In order to expand Michigan's agriculture industry, we need access to essential natural resources like water. What would your administration do to ensure access to these natural resources? And Dr. Tanadar, if you would begin.
You know, when I was growing up, we didn't have a source of fresh water. Actually, the municipality only gave us drinking water for about an hour. So people in the neighborhood would stand in line at the public tap water to collect drinking water for all of the day. The rest of the time, we got our water from the well. We had a little bucket that was tied with a thread. We'll put that into the well, and that's how it was my job in the morning to fill up all of the tanks in our house with water from the well. And that water would get used throughout the day for anything but drinking. So water is very critical for you. And fortunately, Michigan has good availability of water. I want to protect our Great Lakes. I want to shut down Enbridge Line 5 that could contaminate our lakes. I want to ensure that companies like Nestle do not steal our water for nothing. And I want to give you the right to use the water on your property. So if you have a well on your property, any source of water in your property is your water, that you should have access to it, and the government should not be taxing you and charging you for that water, because that's your private property, and I would respect your rights as a private property owner.
Thank you. Dr. Al-Sayed?
So our state sits on 21% of the world's fresh water. 21% of the world's fresh water, 84% of the United States of America's fresh water. And yet, every time you hear about some kind of disaster that's related to water, it's happening in Michigan. That, to me, is one of our biggest political failures. And let me tell you what I think we need to do to solve it. Number one, the reason we have so much water is because of the Great Lakes. And yet, we have not done what we needed to protect them. We've allowed a corporation to run its pipeline through the Straits of Mackinac, where if it were to burst, and it's 15 years past its easement, by the way, if it were to burst, it would poison both Lake Huron and Lake Michigan at the same time. We've got a challenge with Asian carp. We've got a challenge with algae blooms because of the runoff from big corporate polluters. So we've got a responsibility, I believe, to stand for that water because it's a national good, right? 21% of the world's fresh water, and we know that water is going to be one of the most important commodities in the future. That's just the truth. And so we've got to protect our Great Lakes. We've got a company like Nestle, who is bottling water for cents on the dollar, taking our water from our aquifers, while we've got people in places like Flint who can't get clean water, and people like in places like Detroit where they're getting their water shut off. So we've got to be able to stand up and say, listen, if you're going to bottle our water, you're going to pay a fair rate for that water, and we're going to make sure we use that to be able to invest in water for our future. Now, the cost of being able to provide water has less to do with the access to water, has more to do with broken water infrastructure. Everybody knows that the infrastructure in the state's broken, but usually the stuff that we feel is our roads and our bridges, right? Because you're driving over them every day. But we don't always feel the broken water infrastructure that has not been updated and is going to cost our state billions of dollars. So we've put forward a plan to be able to create what we're calling a pure Michigan infrastructure bank. And what that infrastructure bank would do is to empower investments, private capital investments into public goods projects, have them funded over a long period of time, which is something that our state government doesn't do for a very, very good job of, but being able to invest them over 7-8 years over time, bring in private capital into financing them, and then have them funded over the long term. That includes water infrastructure, also includes roads and bridges, also includes access to broadband in some of our more rural communities. All of those things need a funding vehicle, and this Pure Michigan Infrastructure Bank would be that. And then the last thing we need to be able to do is recognize that the different uses of water are different depending upon where you go. And so we've got to think locally about how we empower those different uses. Whether you're talking about an urban community or a rural community or a farming community, how do we make sure that we're providing people access to clean water while protecting from the water runoff that might affect all of our water resources? Those are something that all of us have to come together on. The fact is, we can't continue to be the country's capital for water and at the same time watch our water get poisoned or bottled or shut off on people. That's just something that to me is as a doctor and as somebody who recognizes that 70% of our very bodies are water, something that we can't continue to have happen in a state like ours. And so I'm committed to being able to work together around water stewardship, around water infrastructure development, and around water protection to make sure that over the long term we're protecting our Great Lakes and protecting water access for our communities and frankly for the country into the future.
Thank you. And with that, we are nearing the close of our forum. So if each candidate would like to take 2 to 3 minutes to summarize their thoughts, Dr. Tanadar, if you would begin.
Thank you for this opportunity to meet all of you. Michigan is at a critical juncture. Our state is stagnant. Our education system is at the bottom among all states. Our infrastructure is crumbling. We are lost in transparency and ethics among all states. The career politicians have given us a lot of talk, and on both sides, both parties, the current front runners are career politicians, either a corporate Republican or a corporate Democrat. And we need a governor that's a champion for economy and champion for small business. And I bring 26 years of experience running small businesses. I have a first-hand knowledge and strength as a strong leader. I have had life experiences, having grown up in poverty, understanding how 22% of Michiganders live under poverty. I have experience creating jobs, creating businesses, having a vision. You know, most of, like, our small businesses, we have a vision, we implement our vision and make it happen. And I have a vision for Michigan. I have a vision for Michigan to take our education to the top level, top 10%. I have a vision to invest in our infrastructure to ensure that businesses will come to Michigan because we have skilled workforce. And we have an infrastructure that's conducive to doing business. So I will bring my lifelong experience, I will bring my strong leadership to Lansing to change the culture in Lansing. I would change the pay-for-play culture in Lansing, the effect of lobbyists, and a government that doesn't work for people. I would come in and do the right thing, not be beholden to anyone but the people of Michigan. And I'm committed. I'm doing this not because I need to do this. My resume is pretty good, and I'm very proud of it. But I'm doing it because I'm passionate to give back to Michigan and make a difference in people's life and raise their quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dr. Al-Sayed?
Yeah, one of the things that my parents, Muhammad and Jackie, always agreed on is that they wanted their kids to have an incredible public education, and we did. I got to go to a public high school where I had this awesome educator. Her name was Ms. Rayburn. She was my civics teacher. And she had this unique ability to put a lesson in your mind. It was as if you were sitting there in the room where our framers made the decision that we would be the kind of society that put ideals above identities. And among those ideals is one my dad took a bet on when he came to this country back in 78. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are created equal. Those truths, if we care to embrace them, they call us to something. Because we know that right now, too many people get ignored. Whether you're talking about people in places like Kalkaska who haven't had good schools, high quality education, or good roads for a very long time, or people in Detroit who haven't had the same. Our ability to communicate together, to touch hands around solutions to the problems that we face, will dictate what happens in 2018. And we talked a lot about agricultural issues today, but let's be clear, all of us here are people. And as people, we can see exactly what it is that we need. We need to have access to an economy that doesn't lock us out, but includes us. We need to have access to good schools where we know that our kids are going to get access to the skills they need to continue forward or trade in a trade or figure out what they want to do next. We need to know that no matter what happens, that when we get sick, we're going to have access to the healthcare that we need without having to put our family's financial future in ruin. We need to know that when we empower our local environment, that in fact, we can hand it off to our kids as pristine as we found it. These are human issues. And it doesn't matter where you go across the state, because I've been to over 100 different cities. When you talk to poor or working or retired people in places like Detroit or Flint, or poor or working or retired people in places like Kalkaska or Marquette, they're asking the same questions. They want us to focus on building the kind of politics that doesn't lock them out. And here's the problem. Right now, we've allowed these huge mega corporations and millionaires and billionaires to buy our politics. They get to decide the policies that are going to move forward for our kids because they've paid $68,000 checks or can put their own money up to put themselves on TV. That's the problem with our politics right now. And unless we're willing to come together around a politics that puts us first, our kids, our grandkids will suffer. So the opportunity that we have right now is to rethink the politics of the moment. We are running a campaign that's founded on people coming together beyond their differences, be they regional differences or racial differences or religious differences, to think about a future that empowers themselves, their kids, and their grandkids. If that is something that excites you in a society where our government was supposed to be for people and by people, then I'm asking you to support us. Because this is not about me. This is not even about who will be governor. It's about the kind of politics that we usher into Lansing, how we break the corporate dominance and chokehold on our politics that we have right now, and how we build a place where everybody has equitable access to the kinds of goods and services that they need to live a dignified life. That's what this movement is about, and I look forward to walking that path with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Candidates, thank you very much for your time and your thoughts on Michigan's agriculture industry. We know your schedules are busy, and your attendance here today demonstrates your commitment to our second largest industry in Michigan. And thank you also to our sponsoring organizations that brought us together this morning. Thank you all.